From the streets of Melrose Park to the trading floor of the Merc, he's fought for every dollar he's ever earned. And now, with personal liberty and our system of capitalism under assault in America, he's here to seize back our rights from the government. With a cigar in one hand and a copy of the Declaration of Independence in the other, he's Sean Thompson. And this is the Sean Thompson Show. This looks like a job for me, so
everybody just follow me, because we need a little controversy. What made America the youngest and the richest is the principles, Americanism, which is based on the Enlightenment. The period before the Enlightenment was the worst time to be around. You were a serf or you were a lord. That's unfortunately where we have been slowly reverting to. My next guest is the author of a book that three chapters in, I sent an email to the lovely Honey Bunny, and I said, please get me the author. I love the book. And it's true. The name of the book is The Coming of Neo-Feudalism, A Warning to the Global Middle Class. It's out now. I highly recommend it. The author is Joel Kotkin. Joel, thank you so much for making time for me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And, you know, this is something that most people miss, is that if you're living in a society, if you're living under a servitude, whether you volunteer for it or willful ignorant to it, it is a life of feudalism. It is a life of constantly either running on the belt or being a victim of the system, of the welfare system itself. And that is virtually every big city in this country.
Well, that's certainly, and that's certainly the direction we're going in, which is, you know, I'm not a conservative. I think that, you know, what progressives should be doing is looking at ways so people can take care of themselves, you know, whether it's, you know, good education or building the right infrastructure or having incentives for businesses to expand. But that's not what the new progressives are about. The new progressives are about redistribution, because that part of it has to do with their concerns about climate change. What they want, which is the essence of feudalism, is a solid sort of steady state kind of economy where, you know, basically a few people control everything, and upward mobility, which is really the essence of the American experience for sure, is increasingly difficult to secure. And that's where we are now, particularly for the younger generation.
Joel, you know, it's funny. I don't call myself a conservative. I actually call myself a liberal, because I believe in the principles of the Enlightenment, and it leaves me no other choice. However, right, what I do recognize is that there are government supremacists who describe themselves under all different political Trojan horses. And that's what we have been a victim of. There's a duopoly. One side pretends. And as I was reading your book, there's a portion in it where it's the serf swearing allegiance to the Lord. I'll love what you love. I'll hate what you hate. That right. is what this country has been devolved into. And that is why you are blindfolded with this sense of party affiliation, when the principle is you either believe in a republic and that I, as an individual, am entitled to unalienable principles and rights, or I'm not. And now I have to pick my favorite oligarch. That's where we are. How do we break the chain? Because I'm not at the end of your book yet.
Well, I'm not sure I have the answer yet. I mean, I think the first thing is that we have to recognize what's happening. And we have to recognize that many of the words that are used, conservative, liberal, progressive, actually don't mean very much. That what's really important is the shift of the class relations in the society, and the difficulty of, let's say, Main Street against Wall Street is certainly one piece of that. And I think what you have to do is you have to recognize what the situation is, and then you have to start saying, hey, you know what? This is not what I want. And I think we're seeing some signs of it. I'm seeing it among, for instance, my younger students are more skeptical, less doctrinaire than they were 10 years ago. And I think particularly among both Asians and Latinos, who are, you know, basically the demographic future of this country, in very large part, a lot of them are chafing. You have Republicans doing well in South Texas. You have even in You have Asian neighborhoods in New York City going for Donald Trump, of all people. I mean, there's clearly something happening. But the problem is you have a large number of people who either work for the government or are dependent on government transfers, and they want more redistribution. And that's and that's what, you know, Biden and the current progressives are giving them. And the group that has to pay for it are all the poor schmucks who own businesses, own their own homes.
That's always the way. That's always the way. That's the way the tax system is set up. That's the way the Leviathan funds itself. And when you see the celebration of feudalism, and that, to me, is the policies that we're calling infrastructure that the people who have paid taxes for the last 70 years in this country have been paying for, the maintenance and the operation of government infrastructure. Yet it's always an emergency. Isn't the emergency and the factor, the fear factor of the collapse of society, the greatest weapon of the government supremacist?
Yes, and we have, we've had two very strong cases. One is the pandemic, which, you know, I'm not interested in the, you know, in the whole anti-vax thing or anything like that. But I do think it gave to government and continues to give to government unprecedented powers. We've never seen anything like it. By the way, same things in the UK, Australia, Canada, you know, countries that are more similar to us. And then you know, you have the climate change issue, which, again, is a real issue. It tends to be greatly exaggerated, but many people who are climate change zealots look at the lockdown and say, maybe that's something we can do. And so what you're seeing, and a friend of mine made the very good point, somebody in Washington, he said, we don't even pass necessarily laws that specify specific actions. We give power to government agencies and they do whatever they want. Because many of the things that are being imposed are things that would never pass. Let's say here in California, we have this electric car mandate. In reality, that would have never passed the legislature because there are too many people who have constituents who would be hurt by it. But you just say, well, let the California Air Resources Board decide. And this is happening all over the country where the political class, afraid of the consequences of their policies, hand it over to bureaucrats to run. And so what we've ended up with is the bureaucracy is the equivalent of the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages. And everybody else is sort of out of luck.
And it's just as confident in its wrong conclusions. That's the part that annoys me. Ultimately, as somebody who believes in the principles of liberty, I'm hoping that there will be the ugly truth of objective fact, yet it never seems to arrive. I'm in my 50s, and I remember as a kid the predictions of an ice age. I remember all of it. But ultimately, I was waiting for, well, okay, you've said this and this never happened. And then there's such a reality that sometimes your so-called cure is far worse than anything you were objecting to. And you see that in California as the greatest example, arguably the most beautiful state on the planet, the most beautiful area, the richest, most vibrant. It's kind of being brought to its knees. Not kind of. It's being brought to its knees. And I'm wondering, will there be a time when people say, okay, we've tried it your way. Now let's remove the government supremacy from it and move forward with life itself?
I certainly hope so. But this may take quite a long time. And what worries me is that by the time people begin to realize that, A, the constituencies for a centralized sort of authoritarian regime will be too powerful to resist. You'll have generations of kids. You know, I'm a writer, but I also teach at Chapman University, and the kids are great, and the school is definitely a free speech school, but I see what they learned in high school. They don't know as much as they should, and the version of history that they have has been very much politicized. So, like for instance, one student talks about, you know, the problem with gender issues, and blames it all on Christianity, and the and racism, you know, white racism. And I said, well, you know, if you're worried about things like misogyny, why don't you go to Japan or China, or, you know, go to the Asian cultures where they were never really Christian, and the patriarchy, if anything, was worse. But the way we're teaching things, how people are learning, and now starting into the junior highs and high school, is so distorted, and there seems to be not a lot of ability to come up with your own ideas. Now, the one thing I am very pleased with, my colleague Sam Abrams, who has done a lot of surveying, is I think the young people, and I'm thinking to the generation of my youngest daughter, who's 18, are a little bit more aware that there are two sides to every story, and that you can't have a situation where a doctor in California, for instance, cannot object to the CDC on any basis, even though we know that the CDC, you know, they're human, they made mistakes.
Gone is that critical thinking. You know, this is something that I recognized as a young kid. This idea that government is occupied, these positions are occupied by anything that human beings, is the beginning of the end, because you give it this arbitrary control and you refuse to recognize the fact that humanity in general has about a third of the people that are real good, a third that are okay because they haven't made a decision, and a third that are real bad. And if you have an incentivized revolving door of pay-to-play corruption that would make a Chicago politician blush, odds are you got a corrupt system. And that's the ultimate thing that I think Americans have to get to. Any system that is willing to censor information or a rebuttal is probably corrupt. And I'm hoping that's the silver lining in what we've been facing over these last 3 years.
Well, and certainly one of the things that you see that's very feudalistic is the idea, you know, the science is settled. Like, no, science isn't settled. It always changes. You know, I mean, when my father was a doctor, and he would tell me about how, well, you know, things we thought were the right thing to do probably killed people because we didn't know better. I mean,
yes.
You know, science is not science is being treated as if it's the gospel, as opposed to something that you know men and women come up with that's constantly being tested and changed.
Yes. You know, is the failure that we're witnessing in these big cities, in California and Chicago, where I'm broadcasting from, in New York and New Jersey, the failure of the economic failure and the separation of societies, which always happens when government supremacy is at its strongest, and the shrinking of the so-called middle class, do you have confidence that this will be what wakes people up from the failures and corruption in government?
I think what we can tell in the at least now is people are voting with their feet. They're leaving Illinois to go to, you know, Texas.
You could say Florida. I'm standing here in shorts. You could say it.
Okay, or Florida. Well, I live in Southern California, so I always win the weather discussions.
Yes, you do. Yes.
But the bottom line is, you know, you have people are voting with their feet. So, like, for instance, the governments and the planning elites and a lot of big capitalists, they want people to live in little apartments that they rent for the rest of their lives, or maybe a little house that they rent for the rest of their lives. They want people to live, you know, in these in very dense, regulated environment. And what are people doing? They're saying, to hell with you. And as Americans have been doing since the time people from Europe started arriving here, and probably the Native Americans did the same. Hey, this isn't good. I'm going to go somewhere else. And that's what people are doing. And that's the really interesting change, that where there's a lot of potential. People are moving to places like Tennessee, Texas, you know, Nevada, Arizona, all sorts of different places, Florida, where they, and what's really interesting is the money that's following them. So, for instance, we're here in California, we now have a big budget deficit. Texas and Florida and Tennessee all have surpluses.
And you know what's funny? I'm looking at the way in which California is threatening people to move out. They're going to tax them on their income and all the rest of it. And my question to you is, does it ever come up among these totalitarian mindset people, that the system they're advocating, the system they insist on implementing, not only has it never succeeded, but it's only led to a collapse of all societies. Do you think they're aware that there is no successful collectivism that has ever worked?
Well, the only example that, you know, I mean, obviously, and this is another thing that's very scary when you teach, and again, I think this really falls on the grade schools. Kids don't know what the Soviet Union was. So they don't even know the biggest example of how this way of thinking didn't work. You know, as if it never existed. Like, I put up a picture of Lenin. Nobody even knows who he is. Lenin, you know, to me, one of the most important figures of the 20th century, you know. And they do try to say, well, it's going to be kind of like, you know, Sweden. Well, a couple of things. One, Sweden's got its own share of problems, but, you know, Sweden and Norway and Denmark are tiny countries that have been historically very homogeneous. They're not a place that have absorbed. Actually, we absorb their people.
Right.
They don't absorb ours. And it's still very much a democratic capitalist system. You know, there's still the private ownership of the means of production.
Yeah.
So, you know, to call Sweden socialist, I would say maybe social democratic, but there's actually very, very powerful corporations in Sweden in particular, but also in Norway and Denmark. And, you know, I'm not sure that doing business there is harder than doing it in California.
You know, Joel, you remind me, if kids were educated, would they be able to pass this swindle on to them that they're inheriting? And the answer is no. It's almost as if the government is incentivized not to teach the kids how to think, but what to think. And it's nice to hear that at least there are people that are out there providing a way in which kids can be taught things like the Soviet Union. It's a shame to think, you know, I grew up during the Cold War. And we knew that it had a great sales pitch, but it ultimately was responsible for the deaths of 160 million people. If you factor in China and communism and Cuba and all the rest of it, it's a shame to see these kids romanticize philosophies that are responsible for the deaths of hundreds of millions of people.
Well, they just, you know, again, you know, no matter how bright a kid is, if you do not give them good information, and more than the point, like, I always try to stress, I don't care what your point of view is, but back it up and acknowledge that there are other points of view. That's the way to get to really important knowledge, you know, because you have to be able to be open-minded. And again, this is very much medieval mindset. There is one set of truth, and if you diverge from it, you're a heretic. That's where we're headed in many cases. Now, I do think that people, A, are voting with their feet. I think a lot of people are also, like, one of the things that I see with cities, and I wouldn't be surprised if some of this takes place in Chicago, people just give up on the political system. I lived in Los Angeles for 40 years.
What's happening. That's exactly what happens.
You know, people say, okay, you know what? I can't change anything. I'm going to try to live my life as distant from God. I'll pay the highwayman his fee, and then just leave me alone. And that's why people move to suburbs. That's why they move to Texas. And when they move to those places, they try to separate themselves from the policies that drove them out. And so, you know, that's why, you know, people keep saying, well, all these Easterners are going to move to Texas and they're going to turn Texas into a blue state. Well, Texas has been consistently and some ways even more heavily red, because people come back and say, oh, you want to see homeless tents everywhere.
That's what saved Ted Cruz. It's an astonishing fact. The people who saved Ted Cruz were the Californians that moved to Texas. Joel, if this country is saved, and I mean this, you and I would argue on a lot of things, but we agree on the principles, and that's what will save the country. And your book will be essential to that. Your kids will give on to your grandkids this book. I thank you for writing it. It's a fascinating book. I am truly, truly enjoying it. And I cannot thank you enough for writing it and for making time. And please, I want to know when you write your next one. I'm fascinated by it. I love your writings. Joel, thank you so much. Go ahead.
No, I certainly, you know, I'm writing a lot. I'm I'm trying not to write another book for a while just because, you know, I got too many other things going on.
Well, you won't have to. It's that good. I love the book.
Well, that's great.
The name of the book is The Coming Neo-Feudalism, A Warning to the Global Middle Class. He is Joel Kotkin, and I really appreciate you making time for me. Thank you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.